This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, buddy, here we go. It's hour three of the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. New book out today, The Wonder Boy by Tim McMahon. The elite Mavericks and NBA reporter Tim McMahon joining us now here on The Fan. And a good afternoon, Tim. How you doing?
Hey, partners. How you doing? I appreciate you having me.
Man, it is great to have you, especially on this day that now on sale. Congrats on the book. How'd it go?
There was a little plot twist at the end that caused some stress, some unanticipated extra work. But, that's the publishing business also doesn't move quite as quickly as I'm accustomed to in the dot-com world. But, all in all, it was quite an interesting project. It's been in the making for a few years, and it's nice to have the thing to the finish line.
After reading the final chapter that our friend sent over to me, Tim, I was left believing strongly that the Mavs' decision to trade Luka was not crazy at all.
Really? That's interesting. That's interesting. I would, the one thing I'll say is I talked to a lot of people in a lot of front offices around the league. You know, I'm talking dozens of people, and I've yet to find one from another franchise who thinks that the Mavericks made a good move. So, there's certainly a lot that went into the decision, fraying of relationships, the conditioning concerns have frankly been a thing throughout Luka's career. But this is the first time we've ever seen a player, not just of this kind of talent, but who's produced at that level, traded before his prime, that didn't want to be dealt. You know, there have been guys who got moved, but it was because they basically forced the hand of their franchise, and that is absolutely not what happened here. So unprecedented, I'll say that. Bold, risky, there's a lot of words to describe it.
I think the trade itself was terrible, but like when I'm reading about the alienation basically that was between Luka and the front office, they couldn't get a hold of him. He's putting on weight when he's supposed to be getting in shape. I felt like maybe this front office and team felt kind of hopeless trying to manage this guy. And, when you wrote that a source said they felt like they were being held hostage inside their own team by the player, I thought at that point, hey, the decision to trade him, I think somewhat reasonable, is just what they got was unforgivable.
Well, and so the majority of people I talk to around the league, the opinion is you just can't trade a guy who's that type of generational talent going into his prime unless you absolutely have to because he's demanding and he's forcing it. There were people who said, hey, I understand wanting to get out of the Luka Doncic business, but you have to maximize your return. And simply because Nico, by his own, not just admission, but he's proud of the fact that they kept it top secret. There were no rumors. And most importantly to Nico, Luke and Bill Duffy had no idea this was coming. He felt like they had to blindside him with it. And in that process, you lose leverage because you're not opening up to other bidders. I think look, I reported on his conditioning probably more than anybody, and it is a concern. It has been. There have been consistent issues throughout his career, but it's pretty hard for me to say that it's something that is just, you have to reach the conclusion that you got to give up on the guy when he just averaged 34-10-9 and led a team to the finals while playing more minutes over the course of the regular season and playoffs than any other player in the NBA. So was there plenty of room for improvement, of cause for frustration? Certainly. Absolutely. But to say, as Patrick Dumont says, you can't win that way, I don't understand how you can say that fresh off a finals appearance, or as Patrick would say, making it to the championship games.
That frustration was definitely felt throughout Mavs Nation as we have Tim McMahon with us here. I guess, Tim, like as you've been talking to people around the league, how uncommon is this to where it's like Luka and he's certainly got issues that are frustrating the Mavs, but then other superstars, like maybe not all of the things are the same where it's Luka and the weight issues. But I mean, is there kind of a bag of hair around for all of these superstars that teams might not want to deal with, but they deal with it because they're just so damn good?
Yeah, and, as somebody says in that final chapter to me, basically Luka, by superstar standards, was there some maintenance involved? Absolutely. But is he the highest maintenance superstar in the league today? No. And as I said, ask Miami if they would have rather dealt with Luka or Jimmy Butler over the first few months of this season. And the thing with, these guys having their own body teams or medical squads, or however you want to say it, that's not unusual. And look, it's been an issue with Kawhi Leonard and the Clippers. It was an issue with Donovan Mitchell and the Jazz. And in this case, it was an issue with Luka and the Mavericks, but that's also after the Mavericks got rid of the people in the health and performance group that Luka did know, that he did like, that he did respect, and most importantly, that he did trust. And so, again, there were issues there. I don't think Luka was solely or even primarily at fault for some of the issues, though.
It's Tim McMahon here with you on the Fan. So the right move, if you get wind of this as an owner, is to get a new GM. Do you think this is ultimately who the responsibility falls on, is the GM and the owner?
I mean, in this case, Nico Harrison absolutely managed up. I know there's been all kinds of conspiracy theories. Dogs have to come from the top down. I'm telling you, Nico has told you. Nico Harrison talked Patrick Dumont into this. Now, should Dumont have maybe picked up the phone and called Mark Cuban possibly and say, hey, I know we've totally pushed you out of basketball operations, but what do you think of this?
Yeah.
It might have been in his best interest. Should he have maybe, possibly even called another person who's been in that ownership seat? But he didn't. He bought what Nico was telling him. He completely trusted Nico. Nico said in Cleveland, the one time he's discussed this deal publicly, at least in a sort of press conference setting, he said, hey, time will tell if he was right. Obviously, the Mavericks have had some very unfortunate developments since then. But by shrinking the time frame to 3 to 4 years and trading a guy who's probably going to have a decade-plus run, time was not going to be real friendly, I don't think.
How long do you expect Nico Harrison to be here?
That would be pure speculation on my part. I don't really want to speculate on that. The one thing I can say is Patrick Dumont's, as far as I know, the little he said publicly and everything I know behind the scenes, is he has, he's got Nico's back. He believes in Nico. Nico has his full support. I'm not sure that Dumont had any clue of the financial ramifications of this trade.
Yeah.
That Supermax contract, that's a huge number. I think the Mavericks are going to lose a lot more revenue than they were going to be paying Luka Doncic.
Well, as you were uncovering all sorts of interesting nuggets throughout your time putting this book together, The Wonder Boy, Luka Doncic and the Curse of Greatness, What is one of the things that you found most interesting and stuff maybe that you didn't know but you uncovered?
You know, I think a lot of this is going back with the benefit of hindsight through his time with the Mavericks. I think the stuff that was most interesting for me to learn and was all new and fresh to me was all this stuff with the, with Real Madrid and more specific, I think more recently and more importantly with the Slovenian national team. And I went to Slovenia. You know, I got to know people in the basketball community there. I was around his national team. You know, went to Germany, saw them compete in group play. I talked to, like Vlatko Čančar, who's with the Denver Nuggets, the only other current active Slovenian NBA player, had a nice conversation with him, among other guys. And I think that the one thing that I really kind of hit home with all that was Luka is naturally a guy who leans towards loyalty. If he loves you and he trusts you, he's going to be loyal to you. You know, that's what he wants to be. And his commitment to the Slovenian national team is kind of exhibit A of that. Number one, the fact he plays for Slovenia, period. He had a Spanish passport. You know, he's of Serbian descent. If he wanted to jump on one of these established European powers bandwagons, he could have done that because he had never played in an official tournament for the Slovenian national team until Eurobasket when he was 17 and co-starring along Goran Dragic as this tiny little country beat all these established powers and won that title. So the fact he plays for them at all is an example of his loyalty. The fact he plays every single game he can, every single summer, if he can walk, he's on the floor, he's playing heavy minutes, he's carrying the load, that is extremely unusual. Almost every star in the NBA, it's a case-by-case basis. Luka's commitment to the Slovenian national program has been unconditional. And again, that's an example of loyalty. Now, did I think for a long time writing this book that it could end in a trade? Yeah. I thought that the Mavericks were going to fail to be able to put a contender around him for a long time, as recently as midway through last year. You know, it wasn't until about this time a year last year that I was like, okay, hey, they got something. They might have a chance here. But I never thought he would look for reasons to leave. I thought those reasons might just slap him in the face, but they succeeded building a contender around him. He, despite the friction with the front office and, you know, kind of the complicated relationships, he wanted to be in Dallas. He wanted to spend his whole career here. They changed their minds on him. They decided to dump him.
Hey, Tim, we're starting to hear Mark Cuban kind of talk, you know, on some podcasts and various things, but I want to ask you, and you have a relationship with Mark, as you will, a good relationship.
Hot and cold one.
Hot and cold one. But do you think Mark Cuban has any regret of hiring Nico? And would he have hired Nico knowing that if he was going to do this?
I can't sit here and put words in his mouth, but I can tell you this. Mark Cuban's priority over the previous 6 years or the 5.5 years that he had basketball control during Luka's career was to do everything within his power to make Luka happy. I mean, there were a lot of missteps by Cuban along the way. The Porzingis trade blew up in his face, completely bungled the Jalen Brunson situation. You know, these things are in the book. You know, there was a lot of chaos in the front office with the coaching staff. You know, Cuban should own some of that accountability. But there is just a 0.0% chance that Cuban would have intentionally done anything that would result in Luka Doncic leaving Dallas. Cuban desperately, desperately wanted this guy to spend his entire career in Dallas, just as he did Dirk. Cuban's loyalty to Luka was absolutely, positively unwavering. And look, man, I can tell you, Mark Cuban has not gone to many road games this year. He hadn't gone to a single road game since the NBA banished him from the second row of the bench until the Mavericks are in Los Angeles on February 25th. Cuban bought courtside tickets, and he's sitting right there wearing a pair of Lukas on his feet.
Mm. Yeah. Hey, Tim, but let me ask you this, though, about with Mark and, you know, the situation with him and Luka and all that, though. Is this one of these things where do you blame people in the organization that didn't step up and tell Dumont that this was a terrible idea? I know you said that they, you know, that...
Well, who? Who's, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, is it basketball malpractice for a Michael Finley or somebody? I'm trying to think of basketball operations people or, you know, assistant general managers, or is there anybody in the organization that was willing to put their job on the line and say, this is a terrible idea, guys. It's a terrible idea.
And frankly, I don't know exactly what was said behind closed doors. Okay. I can tell you it was not a consensus decision within the front office. I can tell you that for certain.
Yeah.
Now, you know, should somebody go over the head of Nico Harrison to talk to Patrick Dumont?
Sure.
You know, Patrick Dumont and Nico Harrison want to operate in a very corporate-like structure.
Sure.
I just cannot imagine somebody doing that and keeping their job.
Right.
You know, so can I blame somebody if they didn't feel comfortable doing that? Hey, man, these are human beings with, you know, families to feed and, right, you know, all those kind of things. First of all, I can't tell you for certain that didn't happen. I don't believe it did. But I can't fault somebody for not doing something that almost certainly would have resulted in them being unemployed.
Okay. Finishing up with Tim McMahon here on The Fan. Okay, so with AD coming back last night, maybe Lively and Gafford in the future, how good is this team now as they're cobbling together point guard play?
Well, that, unfortunately, look, this team, it was never going to be a popular trade, but this team is going to have a chance to be really good this season. Kyrie Irving was going to be the leader of that. Kyrie Irving and Anthony Davis obviously were going to be the co-stars. They really needed Kyrie to be the player that he had been all season until he, you know, had just a devastating knee injury. And any chance of the Mavericks being anything more than a pesky play-in team, it went down that night, unfortunately. And then, you know, we'll see about next season. You know Kyrie's going to work. You know he's going to do everything in his power to be able to come back strong. We don't know how much time he's going to miss next season. We don't know what he's going to look like coming off a major knee injury in his 30s. If Kyrie's not himself, it's really hard to see this team as anything more than maybe first-round playoff fodder. It's not nice to say, but that's just the fact of the matter.
No, always appreciate your candor and your honesty there, Tim McMahon. And then what do you think about Nico moving forward? Can fans look at him like, other than the Luka trade, a good GM, or is this a guy that can be trusted to lead them back to contention?
Well, you know, other than her husband getting shot in the head, I think Mrs. Lincoln probably enjoyed that play. based on what I've heard, at least. Wow. You know, but well, like, what do you? I mean, other than the Luka trade, Nico has done a good job here.
Yes, yeah.
He was able to scramble and successfully recover from a catastrophe with Jalen Brunson leaving, and for nothing in free agency in the wake of the Western Conference Finals trip. Now they got fortunate that, because of a lot of controversy and chaos in Brooklyn, that they were able to get Kyrie at a massively depressed price. They were fortunate that the Lakers didn't make a run at him in free agency and they didn't have to sweat that out. And then he made good moves last year. And they weren't necessarily well-received around the league at the time, but P.J. Washington, Daniel Gafford at the deadline, you know, drafting Derek Lively II, Derek Jones Jr. on a minimum. And then, honestly, this year, I thought they had probably the best supporting cast around Luka, but everything revolved around Luka, and rightfully so. So do I think that up until February rolled around this year that from a roster construction standpoint that Nico Harrison had a successful tenure as a general manager? Yes. Do I think that he's going to get a lot of credit for that from the Mavericks fan base after the guy who everything revolved around got unceremoniously dumped and you didn't maximize the return? No, I don't think that people are going to go out of their way to grade Nico on a curve around here.
Okay, Tim, do me a favor. Power rank the Luka problems. The food, the beer, the hookah / heaters.
I mean, honestly, I know there was a picture of him smoking hookah on vacation. I've never heard anybody consider that a problem. The man likes to eat. You know, he enjoys a post-game brewski or two-ski. He does have the remarkable ability to put on weight, while leading the league in you know, in usage rate and playing heavy minutes. So that stuff was absolutely a legitimate concern. The fear was, with all these calf strains, that there was going to be a major injury, that his body's going to break down in his prime. So yeah, all those are real concerns. Again, though, I do have to point out, I don't know if anybody's aware of this, but he did average 34, 10, and 9 and lead a team to the finals and lead the NBA in minutes played over the regular season and playoffs last year. So a lot of room for improvement, diet, conditioning, discipline, all those kind of things. And I get all the concerns and I get the frustration, but typically that kind of production forgives a lot of sins.
Was he a drive-through guy? Was he like a...
I tell you this, you know, Nick and Sam's loves him. I don't think they've got a drive-through over there. But
there you go.
Doggy bags. Yeah.
Eating good.
They've still got the Luca on the menu, as I'm sure you boys know. It's a 77-ounce steak. I joke. It'll look cool order two, but I'm just kidding.
We all know it'd be three. You're the man, Tim. The Wonder Boy by Tim McMahon about Luca on sale now. Thanks again, and congrats on the release.
Hey, really appreciate you boys having me. Adios, amigos.
Salute. There he goes. Quite a conversation, and a guy who has been all over this story, rankling people at times, including Luca. Throughout this entire story arc. But, I mean, it makes a great point. It's like Ronaldo from Brazil, big Ronaldo, fat Ronaldo, right? Mm-hmm. People talked about how out of shape he was while he was scoring the most goals in the entire world.
Sure.
You know, what's the problem here? Wolchuk, where are we going next?
All right. Well, I hated the Luka trade. Let's do top 10 sports teams you love to hate. 877-881-1053. Who do you enjoy hate watching? That's next in the Nation.
Yeah, buddy, welcome back. It's the G-Bag Nation here on the Fan. Time for Wolchuk's Top 10. Here he is, your Wooly Bully, Zach with an H.
All right, who are some of the sports teams that you just love to hate? Did just see this. Very excited, Brian. I'm pumped for this update. Our buddy Tommy Yaris, boots on the ground, his old place of employment there in the 40 acres, Austin, Texas, the Longhorn Pro Day. He is reporting that Texas safety Andrew Mukuba is indeed taking a 30 visit with our Dallas Cowboys.
There you go.
That makes me very, very happy to hear.
Yep, absolutely.
We love ourselves some Andrew Mukuba.
Be a nice pick at 44.
Gosh, he'd be glorious. He really, really would be. His ability to run the alley and smack people, maybe the best among any safety in this class.
Cover.
In fact, if Nick Emmanuel had the same ability to run the alley and tackle like Mukuba had, he would be the best safety in this draft.
Yeah.
But for his size, he just does not strike like he should.
No, I think that I think there's times where Nick just does not play with very much urgency. And Mukuba is trying to get there. He's trying to make plays.
So
and,
good.
Yeah. And he likes to cover and he likes to be around the ball and he likes to be physical. And, you know, like quarterbacks, when they try and throw the ball on him, he's not giving up plays. And the metrics will tell you that. He was the fourth best safety in the country when it came to coverage. You know, quarterback ratings and stuff against him. This guy's he's got some special qualities to him.
Good player, man. Really, really fun watch. Also reporting that Bruce Bochy has awarded the last two opening day roster spots for your Rangers. They're going to go to our buddy Mark Church and Garrison Garabito. So congratulations to them. They have made the Rangers opening day roster. And we'll have more bases coming up at 6. And we're also going to catch up with Dave Raymond coming up here in less than an hour. Expressway.
Cannot wait.
It's going to be awesome, man. Opening day, just a couple of days away. Just two more glorious sleeps. And then, you smell that? Oh, opening day Ranger baseball.
Borderline taste it, Wolchuk. This Gosh. Is what an incredible time of year. And Mark Church making the squad. I think that means everybody that we had interactions with in the clubhouse.
Everybody made it.
Gosh. They got the bump.
What do you say? Good luck charms? I think so.
I'd like to think so.
I think so.
Mark Church has a nice moment in our spring training opening day montage for tomorrow.
Nice.
Mark Church making a nice appearance there. Awesome. I kind of feel like Jock Peterson really stole the show though.
He did.
But he's quite then again, a character. So Cody Bradford.
Ah, Cody. For a moment there, I was like, I think Cody hates us. I think that's just Cody's face. Because I've been watching the Rangers post a lot of their individual one-on-ones with players. They'll ask like a question of the day, get their take.
With the mini mics.
That's just kind of Cody Bradford for you.
Hey, he's just, he's a bit stoic. in that way.
You never know when somebody's going to cut loose, you know?
No.
You never know what's going to do it.
But we got some great personalities, and I'm very, very happy for Mark Church. And shout out to Chido Awuzie as well, our old friend. He's got a new home with the Baltimore Ravens. They needed to add another corner. They lost Plano's own Brandon Stevens, who Heisman the Cowboys said, I'm good here. They were showing interest in him, then signed with the Jets. But now Chidobe Awuzie going
to
be a Baltimore
Raven. I feel like he could be the next former Cowboy to go win a Super Bowl somewhere else.
Oh, he could be.
Yeah, congrats to him.
That might be an early preview for September Super Bowl picks. Gavin Dawson, could he be on the Baltimore Ravens?
I'm eyeballing him. Hell no.
Back-to-back bird championships. Has the league ever seen something like that?
I don't think so. And thank you to NotAFan 105.3. Great subject for today's top 10. I appreciate it. I actually came up with it on the fly. I was spitballing. I was like, I don't really like the options for it today. I want to pivot. And this one just kind of came to mind.
Can I give you my official top five?
Give me your top five.
Lakers first and second. For me, it's not enough to put them as first by themselves any longer because of what they did stealing Luka. I did not know my Laker hate could go any higher.
You know, it always does.
But it absolutely exploded. Then the Astros for cheating and the rivalry and their reign of terror pretty much. Then the Eagles, I think, because of their fans. There's usually, you know, quite a few cool players over there. You know, on the Eagles. Then the Thunder, because they used to be the Sonics. And, you know, I hate them. That was the I-5 rivalry back in the day that I grew up with. And then check this out, Wolchuk. I got the Minnesota Wild because they hate the Dallas Stars so much.
I like that because I've also the hate for Minnesota grew a couple of years ago. Yeah. I got to be a game one of that series. And they took the run on Joe Pavelski, and it was Dumba, who's now currently on the team. And I really hate Minnesota as well. Like, my most hated team growing up, because I got to watch, like, 98, 99, 2000, like, coming into my prime of a young sports fan.
Hey, I think you're in your prime right now.
Thank you. I don't feel it.
Physically.
But, oh gosh, that's so not true. But I hated the Colorado Avalanche. I really did. I mean, those were some wars the Stars were battling back. But I think Minnesota might have taken the cake. I like what you're doing there. It's clearly the Eagles would be one for me. Astros would be two.
Yeah, Eagles and Astros, I think, are in the mix for just about everybody, especially now with the way the Eagles and Sirianni just being so like they were so more likable with Andy Reid.
Can't stand them,
even though you still hated them.
I think the Yankees are out of my top five for the first time in 30 years, just because they've sucked.
They've kind of become irrelevant a little bit. I know they went to the World Series, but did we think they'd win?
Did the Dodgers replace them?
I was going to say, how many of us are going to be watching
the Dodgers won the World Series?
Not yet. Let them win a couple in a row. Then they'll jump in there.
Get ready for that.
I got a lot of sports hate, though.
A lot of sports hate to go around.
It's a hard top five to crack.
Honestly, this list could take up the whole rest of the show, I think, because we do have a lot of hate. Mm-hmm. I hate the Spurs, and I always will. Now, the hate's definitely kind of subsided once you had the triplets of Ginobili and Parker and Duncan leave. But gosh, I couldn't stand them. They were annoying as hell.
Getting a lot of texts from every area code of the Metroplex right now.
I love it.
About how they're hate watching the Dallas Mavericks of Dallas.
We've turned our own. We are eating our own here.
Thanks, Nico.
Any team that has LeBron from the 214, I hate watching the Mavs, the Lakers and the Yankees and the Eagles, the Yankees, the Spurs, the Eagles. The St. Louis Cardinals is a good one, 469. Ever since 2011, I have had an absolute hatred of them as well. Number 10 on the list, Manchester United FC. They are the 10th sports team that people love to hate. Number 9, the Toronto Maple Leafs. Definitely a big name franchise, but it feels like they're always going to lose. They're not actually going to end up doing anything. So I don't really have a hatred for them, but I'm also not in Canada. Maybe Canada was voting there. Number 8, Boston Red Sox. 7, Boston Bruins.
I think you just include all the Boston teams.
Yeah, the Celtics really.
They could I'll tell you,
I hate their colors. I don't know. All of them are on here.
All four of the Boston major sports made the top 10. Red Sox at 8, Bruins at 7. The Lakers are at 6. I thought that was low, Gavin. I thought they'd be top 3 on here. 5 is the Celtics. 4 is our Dallas Cowboys. I did have some people on Twitter said they do love to hate the Cowboys as well.
Yeah.
And I guess, like,
it's crazy.
Even if you love them, maybe you are hate watching them because usually what they're putting on display is hateful and we're annoyed and we're frustrated and we're angry. Number 3 is Real Madrid FC.
A lot of winning.
2 is the New England Patriots, which I think eventually we might be able to swap out for the Kansas City Chiefs if they keep winning.
Yeah, and if they get caught cheating.
It's the scandals,
Could be the scandals. Well, hey, Hagee will tell you there's scandals in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. Number 1, though, the New York Yankees. The sports team that we love to hate, and they are very hateable, the evil empire that they were. But there's the top 10 thanks to Mojo.
You did it, buddy.
Appreciate
congrats.
You,
welcome back, Woolchuck.
Another woo! Top 10 for the ages is in the books here in the G-Bag Nation.
Wow.
Your whiskey sour yesterday made number 7 on the top 10 best cocktails ever created.
Thank you. I'm glad that people are liking and enjoying the whiskey sours.
Let's talk Rangers. It appears Kamar Rocker did something very newsworthy today. We'll get Jared Sandler's thoughts on that. How about Josh Young's injury and more? Sands joins us next in the G-Bag Nation. Let's do this. It's the G-Bag Nation here on The Fan. Top Ranger story just like that. The exhibition season spring training is over. They lost to the Royals 3-1 this afternoon. We watched it in studio as Jared Sandler was out there at the Globe. And Sands joins us now here in the G-Bag Nation, brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Go to advancedhair.com. How we doing, Jared?
Oh, yeah.
Guys, great. But just, you know, tough one. You hate to lose the last game of any season and you know, to lose the last game of the exhibition season. It's going to be a tough one to swallow.
I'm glad you can acknowledge that today, Jared, especially with DeGrom looking as bad as he did.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, he obviously was dominant teams, and you know, you and I were texting a little bit, Gavin, about the velocity, and he seems to want to go into the season throwing 96-97 to save a little bit of juice. And, you know, there's data out there that shows that with each mile an hour harder you throw, slugging percentage drops. So it's more of an old school mindset, not, you know, putting your foot fully on the pedal. And I guess, you know, given his physical situation, maybe it makes sense. I'm curious, though, when the games start to count, how things look. And you know, does he dial it up to 98, 99, 100 a little bit more than maybe what he's suggesting? But yeah, I mean, you know, today he looked okay, and he got through four innings, and you know, if it wasn't for Salvador Perez, I guess he'd look a little bit better. But he definitely didn't look like a dominant version of Jacob deGrom. And so we'll have to wait and see what the new post-second TJ Jacob deGrom looks like. I know we saw a little bit of it last year, but hopefully for a full season, that that journey for him will likely begin Sunday. I know the initial plans were for him to start the fifth game, but now it appears that he's going to start the fourth game, which is Sunday at home against Boston.
Okay, so for Kamar Rocker, he comes in after Jacob deGrom. 8 Ks for him, but 3 walks. And O'Brien was yelling that he couldn't find the strike zone for a period there. What were your takeaways from Kamar Rocker? And is the plan still for him then to go after deGrom? Would he be the fifth starter in the rotation?
Yeah, so he obviously found out, as was reported earlier, he made the team. And I don't know how long he'll stay up. I mean, he could stay up all year, but you know, Patrick Corbin will be in the rotation when he's ready. He's obviously not ready just yet. But, yeah, I think the plan is for him to go Monday. And Brian's right. You know, that first inning, first two innings, you know, he really wasn't throwing a whole lot of strikes, but he was, I guess, effectively wild. And then, you know, he did kind of rein it in a bit. And, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, 4 scoreless, 8 strikeouts is great. You know, he was facing the back half, or he pitched kind of the back half of the game. So, you know, he was facing more of the you know, the second unit for the Royals. But, you know, he was good. And the one thing that, you know, we were talking about earlier, if he's going to face Cincinnati, or really, I mean, if he's going to face Boston, both those teams are athletic teams. They like to be active on the bases. And Kamar Rocker is going to have to not only demonstrate an ability to get big league hitters out, but he's got to show that he can control the running game a little bit. You know, he gave up 5 steals against Colorado, a couple more, I think, here today. And in the, you know, in the regular season, that's going to hurt much more than it does in spring training. In spring training, it's like, whatever, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, that's going to be something that we'll be watching for, certainly on Monday against the Reds. Now, if he throws a perfect game, then, you know, it doesn't really matter. And maybe he just does that every 5 days, and that will answer all our questions. But short of that, he's going to have to figure out how to not only, you know, be able to maintain focus in getting the batter out, but do so without totally ignoring anyone on base. I'm sure that's something that will come. That's not a major concern, but maybe just more of an immediate future concern for Rock. But, yeah, it'll be exciting to see him throw on Monday, and hopefully that command and that control ticks up a notch as well, because Brian's not wrong. It did seem like he was spraying pitches early, maybe getting away with some stuff. So that's going to have to improve once we get into the regular season.
Jared, I was trying to kind of figure out the thing with DeGrom Do you think it has something to do with potential early season weather in Cincinnati? That maybe you have some games that are going to be in the low 50s and rain potentially for those games, that you don't want to have him get ready for that, and maybe in a controlled environment, you know, at our stadium here, he can know he can go out there and pitch and get his and get what he needs done?
Yeah, you know, we had talked about that, and the counter to that, Brian, as well, you know, he pitched for the Mets and he's used to it, but then the counter to that counter, more in line with what you're suggesting, is, yeah, that's cool, that's great. I lived in Michigan, and I lived in, like, sub-zero temperatures. Doesn't mean, like, I'm...
Yeah.
And for a guy coming off his second Tommy John, there's, you know, if you can avoid that, great. Now, you know, the problem is you're probably not going to be able to avoid it for long, because if you look at the April schedule, they're going to be in some colder climates, Chicago, Seattle, and maybe they are able to kind of dodge that, you know, as much. Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense, Brian. I mean, why? And also, I don't know, to whatever degree this is a thing, like, I think it's cool that his first start's going to be at home. I think, yeah, you know, the home crowd's going to enjoy that. Obviously, once you're within the flow of the season, you don't need to manipulate it in that way. But, you know, you have the ability to do it now. And I think having Jacob deGrom start at home is fun. And, I don't know if that, like, the joy of it had anything to do with it. But, yeah, pitching in a controlled climate, I think, definitely is a plus and makes his second start, I believe, would also be at home after that brief road trip against Cincinnati. So I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe that will allow the first few starts to be, you know, home turf.
Current G-Bag of the Day champion Jared Sandler with us here in the G-Bag Nation.
What'd I say?
I think you were just talking about...
Oh, the 12 inches.
Talking about,
we're talking about how much you
sausage,
could take.
How many sausage, could you take, Jared? Boomsticks, mm-hmm, and inches and, yeah, stuff. Painted quite work. The picture. Now, if I had like a magic genie, you have one baseball wish, and you get to have somebody in this year's lineup revert back to their 2023 dominance. Somebody is going to, at the snap of their fingers, return back to the height of their powers. Who in the lineup would you most want that guy to be?
Yeah, I mean, it's Adolis for me, and you know, it's just because when he is going the way he went in 2023, he'll, you know, you've got a built-in hot streak just because of him two or three times a year for, you know, a 10-day stretch. And he's going to be productive outside of that, obviously. But, I mean, this guy just can put a team on his back. I mean, we refer to guys like him sometimes as aircraft carriers, the way that, you know, they're able to shoulder the load. And I just think that the way he can impact a lineup is a little bit greater. It's not to say that Marcus Semien doesn't have the ability to be a really good hitter. He absolutely does. I just think that what Adolis did in 23 and what he didn't do last year was felt heavily, more so than maybe the fluctuation you got from Marcus Semien. And then you guys talked about Jonah Heim yesterday. I think the insurance of Kyle Higashioka, who might end up being 1A to Jonah's 1B, or maybe Jonah's 1A to 1B, whatever the case. I like the depth that the Rangers have there, and I don't know that the upside is as strong, you know, for Jonah as it would be for Marcus or Adolis as a hitter. But I think a middle of the order impact bat like Adolis, and the other thing, if I may cheat a little bit with this, I'm going to also include that going along with that is health for Adolis, and that not only means that Adolis is going to return to form offensively, but hopefully return to form defensively, because the 2023 Adolis Garcia was a Gold Glove outfielder. The 2024 Adolis Garcia defensively, I don't want to say it was a liability, but he was not a positive impact player. And the Rangers would really benefit from having that right fielder back as well as that bat back.
I'd love to have Evan Carter's 450 on base percentage from the 23 postseason if I could, but not on the opening day roster, Sands. How confident are they that he'll be back to being that guy midsummer or something?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I'd probably be lying if I said, you know, they felt like they had full confidence that, you know, it's going to happen. But I think they are really confident. Here's the thing, you know, Evan Carter's 22, and he's not going to turn 23 until late August. We talk about this a lot. If I told you Evan Carter was making his major league debut at 23 to start the 2026 season, you wouldn't bat an eye. There's nothing about that that's like, wow, he's behind schedule. He had an interesting trajectory. Usually when guys get hurt in the minor leagues, it puts their progression on pause through the system. But it didn't seem to really pause it for Evan Carter, because when he was healthy, the results were so impressive, and then there was a need in September of 23. But he really has such limited upper-level minor league experience, and I think the Rangers feel like it's not that he's got stuff to prove down there as much as he definitely could benefit from it. And here's the thing. He'll go down to Triple-A. He'll lead off. He'll face lefties. He'll face righties. It doesn't matter. And I think while Chris Young was clear to say it's not just because of the lefty thing that he got sent down. I mean, he did not have a great camp. If there was a competition, which there was, he didn't win it. He didn't earn the spot. It's not like he was sprinting through the finish line. And I think because of some of the other factors, I think now's the time to do it. I think it is better to do it now than for him to struggle in April and then get sent down. And I think they're wanting to nip this in the bud now, give him some time to grow and develop, get a little bit of momentum, get some confidence in a lower pressure situation. I don't think that the Rangers, I'll say this. If before spring training, someone with the Rangers felt like Evan Carter was going to be a future multi-time All-Star, I don't think that what happened over spring training changes their thoughts. I think it might just delay the timeline in which he gets to that point. I think that they are lacking confidence in what the future might hold. And Gavin, to your point, I absolutely think that Chris Young would gamble that Evan Carter's going to end up spending more time on the big league roster than he will on the Round Rock roster. It's just a kind of a matter of when and how long an injury could expedite that, an injury to someone else, or, obviously if he busts down the doors with a good, two, three, 4 weeks to start off the season, then we might see him sooner than expected. But I do think that he had an interesting path to the big leagues, and I really think that he can benefit from this, especially facing lefties. I really think that it's going to be really beneficial for him in that regard.
Need some more season in there. Sands, before we let you go, we got to run, but is Josh Young going to be okay?
Yeah, I was told and checked in with him. I think he's going to be just fine for Thursday. I think it's precautionary, and so far, same for Corey Seager. So we'll wait on Thursday to find out, but I believe that both guys should be good to go.
Cheers, Jared. Have a good night.
See you, fellas.
He is at Jared Sandler on Twitter. He gets one day off tomorrow and then 200 straight days of baseball, probably. Maybe 220, something like that, if you make it.
Sign up for it.
I wonder how he celebrates.
Yeah. It must be quite a celebration, you know, waking up when you have the realization that 6 months of nothing but America's pastime staring you in the face. Football's finest coming up. Football's finest coming up next, Chief. What are you taking
us? So awful.
Hey, man, it's a long season. It's a long season. Battle of attrition. Walchuk versus Sims in a scout off. Plus Andrew Luck, a general manager, making big time moves next year in the nation.